Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are very glad to have you with us, and also pleased to welcome back to the program the man we like to call our chef in residence. It's a purely honorary title, ladies and gentlemen. It is an honorary title, and it will not entitle you to a discount down at, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond or anything like that. But here on this program, this man, Doyle Moore, has been stopping by once a month on the first Wednesday, 10 o'clock, and talking about food and cooking, and has been doing that with us for a long time. And here's the way that we do this. He picks up a topic, and we've talked about a lot of different things. We've talked about particular dishes and how different people approach them. Maybe we've looked at particular key ingredients. We've talked about styles of cooking from different parts of the world and different parts of the United States, some sort of theme. And the show is loosely organized around that theme. People are welcome to call with recipes or comments or cooking stories. And then sometimes we go in odd little directions and go down side streets. And the thing is that we always have a good time and try to collect some recipes as we do this. And so he picks a topic. And this time around, he said, well, he's interested in talking about greens. Now, we would be happy, I'm sure, if you have a good recipe for greens and it involves at some point going down to the store and buying your greens. Well, that's fine. But he said what he's really curious about is whether or not there are still folks who go out and collect wild greens. And certainly there are a lot of things that grow wild that are eminently edible, and people have been for a long time. Probably nowadays we've kind of gotten away from that, but I expect that there are still folks who do collect and eat wild greens. So what we'd like to do is, if you got a story, if you do that, you can call in and tell us about it. Have some kind of recipe. Maybe this is going to be a story from your childhood. You say, well, yeah, actually, when I was a kid,
exactly,
we did that.
Exactly.
Maybe you don't do that now. But when you was a kid, if you did that, you can tell us the story. And then, of course, you know, maybe you just have a good recipe that deals with greens, and that's fine, too. You know, it needn't be ramps or poke or lamb's ear or, you know, whatever it is that you know that you're
dandelions
or lamb's quarters.
Lamb's quarters.
No, it was some part of a lamb. So you can call in and tell us all about it. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. So now tell me, what started you down this road?
Oh, because, well, number one, I pay attention to our listeners. And when we were talking about, oh, I think two times ago, about mm-hmm. grilled vegetables, mm-hmm. and so finally I made a supper which was all grilled vegetables and fruit, and I was pleased with that, and I wanted something that would push that a little bit farther, and I found a marvelous, it was hydroponic, I know, but gathering of watercress, which just looked absolutely magnificent and different from what I had seen, what we generally get. It was a different leaf, but it was watercress. And I thought, well, why not grilled watercress? And I did it, and I said, winner, a winner. It only took moments, you know, because it quickly wilted like spinach does, you know, mm-hmm. it goes way down very fast. And so it didn't take more than 2 minutes to, in fact, I'd forgotten to cook it for supper. I just jumped up and did it, and there it was ready. And I really enjoyed doing that. And I thought, well, now wait, that was a quick, an easy, a direct, a readily available sort of thing. And it made me think about the fact that, well, again, spring is right here, and a lot of people made an issue of going out and gathering greens, and it was always a puzzle to me. My mother talked about it, and I do recall at an early age of getting some dandelion greens that I had helped pick when I was about 8 years old. I also recall that I wasn't particularly overwhelmed by them, but they were, well, good. If this is what we eat, this is what we eat, and I do know that there is a great Southern appeal of cooked greens, and that some people must have their greens at every meal. and they do. And sometimes they're available in stores. They are more available in stores now than they were. But they also would either grow their own. And I love to find out about turnips that are grown only for their tops. You know,
really?
Yeah, it's a turnip that isn't very big, but it has a great big lot of leaves. And so these are for turnip greens. And so that you actually make a space in your garden for things like turnip greens and carefully eat them.
Mm-hmm. I guess my experience with greens is not all that positive, at least this style of cooking them that says we cook these things forever.
Yes.
So that
yes.
What we get is this, to me, this is not pleasant. Now, I don't know if I'm unusually sensitive to bitter stuff, but to me, this is my problem with greens, that they're cooked
bitter.
You know, especially ones that you do this really long cooking and they're really cooked down and you get this green sort of mush. And to me, it's very bitter it's not a taste that,
well,
that tastes not something that tastes good.
Well, maybe you never ate them right.
Well, now maybe
because
so.
did you have the pepper vinegar to put on them?
Pepper vinegar,
pepper
not that
vinegar.
I recall.
Oh, yes.
Not that I recall.
Yes, that was something that was always on our table, whether we had one thing or another, was pepper vinegar. I have no idea, and that's another mystery in my life. We had this curate that had little tiny green peppers in it and vinegar. I never saw a green pepper in the grocery store. Hot peppers. Tiny hot peppers. I never saw them in a grocery store. And I was always with Mother when she would go buying. I never saw her buy them. I never saw her prepare it. I know that the jar was always full of vinegar, and I think for the 10 or 15 or 18 years that I hung around that curate at home, yeah. I never saw it empty, and I never saw new peppers put in. I believe she boiled the vinegar and poured it over it, and it just 18 years worth of pepper distillation. Nevertheless, you always put that on greens and on spinach and other things like that. And what it does is to what you don't like. It takes away the bitterness and gives it a sour, which is very good. Uh-huh. Another thing is in Southern cooking of greens, you always put just a little bit of sugar in.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting it makes me think of when my dad, he grew up in Kentucky, and visiting his mother's house, this was in his mother's house, there was on the table, there was a shaker that had, that I know now, it had vinegar in it and it had these little tiny chilies that I know my uncle, I believe that one of my uncles actually grew them. That's where
they because I never saw them in a store. But everyone had them.
They were growing around the house.
Up until about 10, 15, maybe about 15 years ago, you began to be able to buy them. You could buy a jar of vinegar and peppers. Mm. But that took a long time to ever get into the markets where it was just a commodity. So I always enjoyed that.
Oh, we got some callers here.
Oh, good.
333-9455. That's the number for Champaign Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. It's our monthly cooking program. We've been doing it for a long time here, the first Wednesday of the month in the 10 o'clock hour with Doyle Moore, our chef in residence. And this time around, he said, we'd like to talk about greens. And he's particularly interested in hearing from people if you do now or if you have ever had this experience of gathering and eating wild greens. Otherwise, of course, you know, recipes involving greens are fine.
I've got recipes for other greens, too.
All right. Let's start here with champagne and line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a memory and I have a remark about hunting wild greens. I'm from the South, and yes, we did have greens with every dinner. And they were mostly turnips, and we had two seasons of turnips. We had winter turnips and, of course, summer turnips.
Oh, yes.
The summer turnips were grown also for the turnip itself. And during the winter, it was a different breed, I guess you would call it. And everything that you have talked about eating greens, cooking greens, what have you, I remember. But up here, now I live in Rantoul on the north side, and there is a place, I don't know where it is, where I have two men friends that go and hunt wild asparagus.
Oh, my, yes.
It is to die for.
Yes.
And that's all I know about hunting wild food here in Illinois.
More than likely, you'll find asparagus in fence rows because it's carried there by the birds.
Oh.
And so you'll find it hiding along in the fence rows. You won't find it out in the field. It'll be along in the fence rows.
Okay. And before you leave today, be sure to tell us where we can find some wild greens.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the
Bye-bye.
Call. And maybe if certainly people who are listening, if they know they have a good spot. See, although I think probably people would say, well, yeah, I have a good spot, but I'm not going to tell you where
Well,
it is.
There is that, too. And I would say guard it and use it and enjoy it.
Yeah. So have you had wild asparagus?
Oh, yes, I have wild asparagus. I think that my wild asparagus experience was in Colorado. For some strange reason, I had a neighbor, a friend, and she had a horse, an Arabian mare, and we would climb up on that horse. I was only in the ninth grade. Climb up on that horse and go wandering across Colorado outside of Denver in Inglewood. And we would go along streams, and we would find bird eggs and everything, and we found asparagus. And so then would cut it. But you see, again, asparagus has to be taken very, very young because you can't have it tall. However, you also knew where those spots were. Along the railroad was a good place, too, along the edges of the railroad.
And is it essentially like domestic asparagus?
Oh, yes, exactly. It's exactly the same thing. Same thing.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, the seeds may come from your own garden. They were carried there by birds.
Ah, all right. Very good. Well, let's talk with someone in Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. Couple of things. One is that bitter seems to be something that some people can taste more readily.
Yes. It's one of the flavors, yes.
My two daughters-in-law both are very sensitive to bitter. One won't eat quinoa because she tasted it.
Oh.
And so maybe, David, you're a super taster.
Well, I don't I think it's something that I sort of have this feeling that fairly recently my taste has changed, and that's something that's happened, and I'm becoming somewhat more sensitive to bitter things. I don't know. I'm starting to have a problem with red wine.
Oh dear!
It all just tastes. It doesn't taste good to me.
Uh oh.
Anyway, that's another story.
And I have a recipe that I use for kale that uses balsamic vinegar, but the problem with adding acids to greens is it turns them khaki green, you know, it turns them olive green instead of a nice, bright, luscious color. It bugs me to put... I like the way it looks, but I like without the vinegar, and I like the way it tastes with the vinegar.
With the vinegar, yes. Well, do you cook it with the vinegar, or do you put the vinegar on as a sauce after you've put it on your plate?
As a sauce. With this one recipe, you steam the kale, chopped up kale,
in
its own little water that comes with it when you've washed it. And in a little saucepan, you cook in some butter, or I use better, whatever, just right. I can't remember the name of this stuff that's fake margarine. It's good for you. Some raisins.
Oh, and some raisins.
Raisins. And
yeah, a little
bit
sweet.
Of butter.
Yes, a little sweet. Uh huh.
And then you also add some balsamic vinegar. I think that's just it. You just cook them for just a little bit, so it's very quick.
And that's kale you use.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kale.
Now kale you can grow in your garden, and especially all winter long. And it can be one of the first greens that you can go out into your garden and get because it doesn't really it survives winter,
and
it's very, very early. I know in England kale is one of those things where you go out into the snow and pick kale leaves and they're just quite delicious.
Well, in terms of wild greens, I finally had a chance to try ramps this year.
Oh, did you? Where? I mean,
I didn't get them here.
Oh, that's why I was wondering.
Has a farm in Ohio, and I figured out what they look like. It was a series of events that finally taught me what they look like, and I ran across some bulbs sticking out of a floodplain. Last year, and I dug some of them up and transplanted them to where I could get at them more readily, and I'm not ready to harvest them. But now I realize that they look a lot like Lily of the Valley.
They look like Lily of the Valley. They're two leaves, and they are an allium, so they are related to the onion, and they have two leaves on them and the bulb. Yes.
But the leaves are quite fat. They're fatter than Lily of the Valley.
They're fatter and they're lighter green.
And on the internet it said to dig them up, but I didn't want to dig them up because the closest patch to the kitchen was only about 2 feet by 2 feet. I didn't want to dig them up.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I just culled some leaves and cooked them with a little bit of butter. And on the internet, it said that they would be very strong tasting, but I thought they were very mild, oniony flavored, and they had a lovely deep green color.
And you can also eat the root.
Yes, you can eat that root. Yeah, I just didn't want to dig them. I wanted them to stay there and multiply.
Don't go to Canada because In Canada, they're a endangered species, so they don't want you to eat. They grow from South Carolina up to Canada, and in Canada, they don't like you to eat them, and so they kind of not push that a lot.
Yeah, well, this is our land, and I didn't dig any, but except for the ones that I dug in the fall last year, and transplanted and divided them up so that they would multiply, put them in some additional places. I first ran across them when I saw the flower stalk and no leaves. I think this is a plant that produces the leaves first.
Yes.
The leaves die back and then the flower comes up. I think. I'm not sure. I will find out. But anyway, I was pleasantly surprised. I really liked the color of them. Oh, and something else that I just did with greens is I bought some beets, and I had some really nice greens on them this week. And I looked in the Farmer John cookbook, the guy who at Ebertfest.
Yes, indeed.
And they were suggesting serving greens with, I think it was in his cookbook, with pureed beans.
Pureed beans.
It was either there or it was in the Vegetables Every Day cookbook. Anyway, so I didn't have any white beans, which is what was being suggested, but I had some garbanzo. So I made some hummus.
Oh, yes.
And then I cooked the greens, and I made some scallops, and I stuck the hummus in the microwave and warmed it up. So I put the greens over warmed hummus. And I had never heard of anybody warming up hummus, but it was quick, and it was, I got my fiber in and whatever. They were just talking on the afternoon magazine about the benefits of beans, et cetera. So I felt very healthy, and it's never occurred to me to warm up the hummus.
Yes, because you generally think of that as a starter or a cold food and such. I believe at Pasha they warm the hummus and squirt it out of a tube and make a little round of it and it's warm. So maybe a Moroccan form of that would be done hot. But that's good.
Somebody else has thought about it, but I thought of it, but I just hadn't run into it before, and I thought, a quick way to have an interesting side dish.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
Okay, thanks.
Well,
you
thanks
bet.
Very much. We appreciate it. Other calls are welcome. You got some recipes to share with us. This is our monthly program on cooking. Our guest is the man we like to call our chef-in-residence, Doyle Moore, and each time we do it, he picks a particular topic, and we concentrate on that. Sometimes we go in other directions, but we generally hover around one topic, and this time around, he said, well, he's interested in talking about greens, particularly on talking about wild greens, and wanted to know, are there still folks who go out and gather and eat wild greens? So if you do, you got a story, that's great, or if you have a recipe, that's fine, or it can just be a recipe that's for greens that you can go down to the store and buy. That's fine, too. Any and all of that. 333-9455, toll free, 800 1-800-222-9455. Line 3 is next in Urbana. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, good to hear from you again, Doyle. I just wanted to see two comments and one kind of question or thought-provoking thing. The first one is, David, you were talking earlier about greens and how to prepare them and mentioned the word bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
And that immediately made me run over and grab my phone. I was like, oh, I've gone across this, and I kind of found something that worked for me. Reactive pans seem to draw that out. Like if you cook in aluminum or if you cook in non-reactive pans, like a Pyrex pan, or if you could use like La Croisette or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Or enamelware, those seem to help a lot. I mean, for example, if you're cooking asparagus or broccoli or anything that has like a certain kind of greenness to it, but greens in general, I kind of found this out just because I was trying to cook really well for my daughter. She's about 2 years old, and I was wanted to introduce the fun things to her, which kids don't like, and she snarfs up broccoli and greens. But beyond that, the second thing was nettles.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to talk about nettles a little bit.
I would, too. That's a real push-me-pull-you sort of thing. I want to get close, but you don't want to get too close to nettles. But
yeah.
Nettles is one of the greens that is eaten a lot in England.
Yeah. It was introduced to me, actually, as almost a kind of a fusion Italian fare. There's a place in town that cooks really, really well, run by a person named Thad. And he had a garlic and nettle ravioli with like a butterscotch oil.
Yes.
It was so good. Hmm. And I've been trying to recreate that off and on. But where would you find nettles other than just by walking through the woods and just all of a sudden, ouch, and harvest whatever's stinging you?
Well, you see, I believe it is a stinging nettle that you use. I mean, I've stayed away from it. The last time I found a nettle patch again was in England down by the river. And so I would imagine that it wants to be in some place that is moist.
Waterways?
Yeah. And I would find out what a stinging nettle looks like, mm-hmm. and I would check to see if that's the one that you're supposed to eat. Mm-hmm. I just know that it exists, but I keep saying, oh no, I don't want to do that. No stinging nettles.
Exactly.
And but I do know that they are eaten and that they are liked.
Yeah.
Bet that would be good in a ravioli. Yes.
Oh, it was really good. Yeah.
Because it would cook down like a spinach and be a nice leafy, greeny taste. That would be good.
Yeah, and then the last comment was also for David. There's a different commentation about wines and kind of falling out of the love of red wine because of bitterness right there. I used to work in wines for about 15 years, and one of the things about certain kinds of grape varietals, they'll have more tannins, which can have bitterness. In certain grapes, like they'll have thicker skins,
mm-hmm.
but there are some wines that have much thinner skin varietals, like Pinot Noir, that might still have all the opportunities out there for you. So you don't have to worry about red.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, and I guess my suspicion was that it was the tannins that I was reacting to, and that it's something that seems to have come on me within the past, I don't know, a couple of years.
It
and
can.
I'm having a very difficult time finding wines, and what I get is, when I first take it into my mouth, it tastes fine, but then it finishes with this very bitter thing, and I think, I don't want to drink this. And I have found some, as I'm starting more and more to try and find stuff that I do like, I'm finding stuff that's okay, but
yeah.
There's still, it still seems to be, it's there in greater or lesser amounts, and it just is, it makes me just not want to drink red wine.
Exactly. But it seems in my experience, there's an evolution in two directions. One, I want to brutalize my palate and find bigger and bigger things. And then two, I'm looking for delicacy and subtlety and balance. And I think you might be evolving towards the delicacy, subtlety, and balance.
Could be.
And also, talking about wine with greens is a good challenge, too. I know that there's chemicals in greens that can make the whole experience, 1+1=-4. So anyway, I just wanted to say that there's still hope for you.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I guess maybe what I need to do is go to some of our local wine shops and say, what do you got that's red that's really low in tannins?
That would be a great direction. And if they can give you several options, I mean, if they're just trying to sell you wine of the month, that's one thing. But try to find somebody who's also a foodie, and it seems like foodies work in wine shops, and wine shops have foodies. So.
Okay. Well, thanks very
much. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Take care.
We will continue and talk next with someone in Sydney. Line one, right here. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
Hi, Doyle.
Hello.
I was just going to pass along up in the north of England. They say if you're going to come for dinner on Sunday, you have to let them know by Tuesday. So they can get the greens on to cook.
Oh, so they can get them on to cook, yes.
Well known. And I was back to the asparagus.
Yes.
I have wild asparagus everywhere here, and I'm sure my great-great-grandparents planted it originally. And I know where all the old fence rows were.
Yeah.
Because that's where a lot of where the asparagus...
That's where a lot of it goes.
Or where the old copses were, because around the edges of it, that's where the asparagus is, and some of the trees may have been pushed away, but the asparagus is still there.
Oh, yes.
So I can wander around the farm for 3 hours picking asparagus, and this is what my dad used to do over at the other place.
Uh-huh.
He went out, and he'd be gone for an hour, 2 hours, something like that, and he'd come back with this load of asparagus because he knew all the places to pick.
Sure.
Where the poison ivy was. Seems to me they often hide together, those two. At least here they do. But... I was going to pass along the Ewell Gibbons tip for finding it, if somebody wants to.
Oh, yes. Now, I've lost my Ewell Gibbons book. I don't know where it is. Stalking the Wild Asparagus.
All I have left is the Blue-Eyed Scallop.
Oh, yes. That's the second book.
Yeah. Anyway, what he said was to look for, you have to know what the fern looks like.
Oh, uh-huh.
And look for it in the summer.
And then go back.
And note. Someplace in your mind or a notebook or something where that was, and then in the spring you can go back to look for the new shoot.
That would be it, yes.
Yeah, so. That's forward planning.
Yeah. Well, I think that'd be the way it would work, too.
And that would work. And the other thing, of course, is to be careful picking along highways, because not because of the cars, but because of the exhaust that's in the soil.
Oh, that's right.
You know, so railway's probably okay. You know, a little used roadside would be fine, but, yeah, if you see it along a highway, I think I'd avoid it.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Because that's something new.
It's not original with me.
All right.
And I have just started trying asparagus on the grill.
Oh, yes.
And under the grill in the oven.
Yes.
And although I find it's very sweet and tasty and lovely, except it's tough to cut then for some reason.
I'm not sure why, but I agree with you. But the flavor is delicious.
Flavor is wonderful.
Yeah. I've just finally broken into grilling vegetables and fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, as I say, that's really what got me to thinking about this. I bet there's a lot more things that I could do. Yeah.
Probably. Oh, yeah. Well, my question about grilling it is whether or not you should take – I never descale it. A lot of people go through and they take every little –
No.
I never do that.
No.
But on the grill, they turn real crispy.
Mm.
Turn right around, and they're crunchy, and I kind of like that, actually. But I wondered if anybody else had any experience with that. Okay, and then I'm going to ramble on a bit.
Do.
I've just been reading Barbara Kingsolver's new book called Animal Vegetable Miracle.
Mm.
It's a year in food life where they decided they were going to go back and eat locally, slow food.
Yes.
You know, all that. And the very first chapter is Waiting for Asparagus.
Oh, my.
And this, I think this is a book everyone who eats should read. This is my little soapbox for the book.
Well, that's good.
It's a wonderful book. She goes through, it's not only the how do you find it and how do you eat it, but and how do you find it locally, but then on into the politics and the science and the recipes, and it's pretty global. So it's wonderful. I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Well, that brings pleasure, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other question I have is about dandelion greens.
Yes.
Somebody can help me with dandelion greens. I gather that it's, no pun intended, it's too late to get it when the dandelions have started to bloom.
Yes, they are. But I think you probably could pick some of the small basil leaves and not take the big the large leaves have more sap in them, and they are very bitter.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be another thing you can do with dandelion greens, and that is kind of parboil them and then throw that water away and then start over again. You could do that. That would get rid of some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also could just take the smaller basil leaves of the dandelion.
Mm-hmm. And do you just cook them down like you would any other green?
Yes. And speaking of that, here is the way you take care of greens.
Okay.
bits of ham or bits of smoked pork or bits of bacon. You fry that out so that you have the grease from that. And then you toss the greens into it and you cook them down just a little bit. You saute them just a little bit until they kind of wilt and clump up in the bottom. And then you pour the water in and then you boil them.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's done in that order. It's not mm-hmm. it's not dump and walk away. Mm-hmm. You do it in an order. And that is the southern way of doing greens, and you do it always in that order. And then depending on the green, whether you are going to cook it only 30 minutes or 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. Collards take longer than something else, and turnips don't take very long at all, and beets are done very quickly. But there's generally this we were laughing about that. You cook them until they're gray. Yes, but that's the southern way. That's the way you do it.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, and if you find out about those turnips that bear mostly leaves.
Mostly leaves, yes.
That would be. We'll look that up.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We are moving into about our last, about 5, 10, 15, about the last 20 minutes.
I think so.
And the man here is the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, shows up here once a month, has been for a long time. On the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour, we talk about food and cooking. We always have a good time telling stories and exchanging recipes. And he picks some topic and he says, I'm interested in this. I want to talk about this. I want to hear about this. I want to hear stories about this. And this time around, he came in saying, what I would like to hear from people is I'd like to hear about greens. And as we have said, we're looking for stories and recipes. And anything that has to do with greens is perfectly fine. But he's really curious about wild greens, what sort of stories and experiences people have with wild greens. If you have or if you do or have you ever gone out and collected and then eaten wild greens. He's saying, well, I'd like to hear about that. Tell me about that. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Line 3 is up next in Urbana. Hello.
Hey, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm enjoying this topic today, and unfortunately I don't have a story for you, but I've always wanted to kind of, when I go camping, to find some good plants that I could eat or saute or something. And actually, this weekend, we're going camping about an hour south of here in Walnut Point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, do you have any, for one thing, can you harvest greens and other types of things from state parks? Do they allow that?
Oh, I think so, because I don't know that you'd be destroying cultures of anything.
And
they would not be in such small colonies. I don't really know about that. Maybe find them and see if you.
My guess is that you probably shouldn't do that. And certainly, I'm sure, as Doyle says, there would be a concern about something that would be rare or endangered, although chances of you thinking about that as something to eat, probably not. But, that's a good question. I'm sure that you could call the Illinois Department of Natural Resources or somebody like that and ask that very question.
Or what you might do is you might find them where you are and then go outside of the park and find them equally not in the park.
It might well be that would be true. I guess the thing that I would want to say, I would want to make sure that you knew what it was.
Yeah.
That you weren't poisoning yourself or making
Don't
yourself
be Elvira
sick.
Madigan and eat oxalic acid.
Yeah.
You remember? Okay. Remember that?
No.
In the movie. Elvira Madigan, she got sick because she was eating oxalic acid, which is oxalic acid. I can't even say the name of what the plant is that has that in it. Well, anyway, don't eat it.
Anyway.
So, do you have any recommendations for things to look for in that area?
Morel mushrooms are awfully. There are some morels, and the trouble is there's a lot of different morels, and I think some of the morels are out now, and that is a good foraging kind of thing. Get a hold of Stalking the Wild Asparagus. I'm sure it'll be in one of the libraries. And okay. Ewell Gibbons, that was a book out in the late 50s, early 60s. And it really deals with this product. I've lost mine, and I didn't have that as a reference today. The rest of it is you might look through Southern cookbooks. There are a lot of different greens that are available that are available wild. Not salsify. Pusley is one of the names. I can't. I had a line of different vegetables that are sort of wild and available. Let's see. I can't find it in my young poke leaves, and they're out now. I'm sure poke. But you only want to get them when they're only 3 or 4 inches tall, and you might not know what they look like. I can't seem to come up with what I want. Mainly shoots, young shoots, and I just can't seem to find it in my list here that I've got. But some of them want to be boiled in water and then throw that first water away and then go ahead and cook them down. That would be another way of doing it. Well, they're just out. What I was really thinking was you have to have a grandmother that taught you. I mean, that's why it's a difficult subject right now. But your grandmother would have taught you what to get and where to get them.
All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Thank you. Oxalic acid is abundant and present in many plants, most notably lamb's quarters, sourgrass, sorrel. And rhubarb. Apparently, it's in rhubarb.
And that's why you don't eat the leaves.
That's why you don't eat the leaves of the rhubarb, yeah. And it's also in the roots of the rhubarb. So I guess as long as you stick to the stalks.
To the stalk, yeah.
You're going to be okay.
Yep.
All right. And we continue. And let's see. We're going to talk with... next, someone I believe on the campus line. How about line number one, right here? Hello.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
First of all, about the state parks. No, no, no. Thou shalt not pick.
Well, that's kind of what I thought.
Yes. Okay. But it was a terrific idea to try to identify them there and then go look someplace else for them. Back in my Ewell Gibbons days, and I haven't heard anybody mention this to you yet, but I used to love to go out and get the very young pods of the milkweed and steam those lightly, a little bit of salt, a little bit of butter. Oh, so sweet and tasty. Yeah.
Yeah, young milkweed, yes.
Yep. But that's the one that I hadn't heard anybody mention.
I'll see you one and raise you one because this is a little bit later in the year when the daylilies are out. Go get daylily bulbs, buds that have not opened.
That's going to be real hard for me because, you know, I kind of like to see the daylilies.
Well, no, but they're ditch lilies.
Oh, there's
get,
so many
get the
yeah,
ones
those
that are
the ones that are all over the place.
All over the place in the roadways.
Okay.
And they'll all be out at once and you can pick enough of those and get those and steam them or boil them lightly. Oh, they are so good.
Okay.
But see, that's a little bit later. That's not a spring green. But yes, the young milkweed, but daylily buds.
Okay. I mean,
the Chinese eat daylily buds, you know.
No, I didn't.
A golden called golden threads.
Oh.
And they're used in hot and sour soup.
Okay.
You have to have that. You can buy dry daylily buds. You can buy them in Chinese food stores.
I'll have to look for that, and I will look along the roadside.
And look, well, wait, it'll be a little bit later. They're not out yet,
mm-hmm.
But when they do come out, and don't feel that you're robbing anything because that's why they're called daylilies. I mean, they're going to last a day and they're gone.
Okay.
But pick the bud, not the teeny weeny buds, but the ones that are going to open day after tomorrow.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
well, thanks.
Thank you.
And hands off the stuff in the state parks.
Oh, yes.
All right. Very good. Thanks for the call. Paris up next, line number 4, the toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a grandfather who taught me.
Yes.
And I've had greens every, in fact, just had a mess a couple of days ago.
Oh, what were they?
He preferred, and I've learned to love, the narrow, and it's sort of ruffled, leaf dock.
Dock? Curly dock?
Curly dock. It has, if you're in doubt, dig the root is yellow.
Oh, wow.
The leaves, of course, are better when they're small, but you can even use the larger ones and steam them with butter and vinegar. Simple, quick.
Butter and vinegar, yes.
He said he had to have his greens every
spring. Every day.
It was his spring tonic.
Yep. That's exactly one of the reasons that it continued as a folk, not really medicine, but a as a tonic.
And my children, of course, in the 60s, thought that picking greens was really beneath them. So I called it spinach. And finally, the youngest child came home and said, "Mother, I don't know anybody else that goes out in the yard and picks spinach."
Oh, yes.
But I also served them to my urban brother-in-law, and he remarked on how good the spinach was. He really thought it was spinach.
Yes, spinach, uh-huh.
And it does have a very similar taste. You can throw in a few dandelion leaves to add a little more twang, if you like.
Yeah, they will. You know, we can buy dandelion leaves at Meijer's here. They're about a foot long, and they are cultivated.
Mm-hmm.
But the dandelion leaves are available in the store here.
Well, the dock certainly.
Oh, dock! I hadn't known about dock.
For the man who's going to be camping at Walnut Point,
yes.
He should be able to find some along the roadside. You find it in fairgrounds. Along railroad tracks, actually along the edge of my yard.
Yes.
We don't use chemical weed killers, so it's there. I also have a Yule Gibbons book that I have treasured. I think you could use the dock the same way you use kale in cooking with potatoes and beans.
Yes, and making soups.
I think
yep.
It would be... Yep. And I've never done that, but I don't see why it wouldn't be a tasty substitute.
That'd be good.
So that's my story.
Well, thank you very, very much, and thank your grandfather.
Oh, I appreciate it. He was born in 1890.
Oh, and, well. See, one of the reasons I was interested in this is that I think that we are still a product of our family history.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just curious as to how many people still kind of maintained a little touchstone. They may not even do it consciously, but it's called. You, that's what I meant. You know, grandmother will teach you, or grandfather will teach you how to have done this, and you will work at it. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Well, and if you can't draw on the knowledge of your grandparents, I was thinking to myself, well, surely there must be field guides to edible wild plants. So I'm sitting here in front of my computer, and into Google I type field guide to edible wild plants, and yes, in fact, there are a number of them. One, for example, the Peterson series, you know, they make many field guides for birds and plants and so forth. Well, they have one. Peterson Field Guides Edible Wild Plants, that's one, and there are others. So if you're interested and you actually want to go out and try to learn what's there and make sure you know what's okay to eat and what's not, I'm sure you could go to the bookstore or at the library or find one of these things and then put it in your pocket or put it in your backpack or whatever. So next time you go out, you've got a reference there.
Sometimes nature study centers will have groups of people who will go out and show you how to collect things to eat.
Right. Because you do want to make sure that whatever you're eating.
I have to tell this one right away because this is one that I learned in this state. This I learned from the Czechoslovakian folks in Chicago, Bess, which is elderberry blossom fritters, and they're coming up. They'll come up in July, and by the 4th of July in Chicago. So 2 weeks before the 4th of July, we'll find elderberry blossoms down here. And I just made a regular pancake dough, even out of Bisquick, and you take the umbrals of the blossoms and dip them down into that and pull them up and then start frying them in a little bit of grease, and then take a pair of scissors and clip off the top and then turn them over as a fritter, put them with powdered sugar, and oh, is that worth it? Some places it's called elderberry blow, mm-hmm. which means the blooming, the quick blooming blow, like we have shad blow and shad other things. But anyway, elderberry blossoms. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be on 2 weeks before the 4th of July.
Let's talk with some other folks here. Let's go to next Champagne, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, I was actually listening early on, and I asked my husband, who grows a lot of the produce, about the asparagus, because I really didn't know there was a difference. And he says that for people who can't find the wild asparagus, especially if they go to the farmer's market, to ask the grower what kind they grow, because some of the growers actually do the variety that's essentially a wild asparagus plant.
Yes.
And still retains then the flavor, and they propagate it themselves. Anyway, so that was one thing. And then I was listening on, and I remembered that we did eat greens growing up, but not too often, because I assumed that my family did what my children do and kind of turned the nose up to them. But my father had books, those foxfire books.
Oh, yes.
And also,
oh, those would be good sources.
Yeah, yes. So I went and I grabbed them, and a couple of them have sections on spring, you know, wild plants and things like that. So that's another source.
Oh, yeah, the poke salad and ramps are in those books.
Right, yes. Yeah. It gives some of the parameters so that people don't eat the wrong parts of the plant.
Right.
Also,
that's why you need a grandfather to teach you. See?
Yes, you need somebody. No, because I've had to ask a lot of my husband's customers about greens, because many of them come from a different background.
And yes.
I've collected a lot of recipes, not necessarily for the wild ones, but some really interesting, some from other cultures, and all. So I have to try them very hesitantly with my own family. Even though my husband and I eat them, my children are not that fond of any greens, so I have to disguise them. But I do have a lot of good recipes, so people should just keep looking. There was one book that I got a long time ago. It's called From Asparagus to... Let me think. I'm trying to... It was a CSA book. Yeah, From Asparagus to Zucchini, and it had a lot of really interesting green recipes that kind of mask the flavor a little bit, or just enough so that you could probably get people to try it and not just think they were eating greens alone.
Mm.
Anyway, so that's all.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you. And let's see, we're trying to get at least one more caller. We're getting really close to the end, but we'll talk with someone here in Vermilion County, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Well, I've been listening with great enjoyment.
Oh, good.
I grew up near Chicago, and my family didn't do greens very much. But since moving to the country, it's been interesting for me, because I got a couple of horses, and I'd follow them around in the spring for years and years, because I'd be brushing out their shedding hair and watching what they would be eating. And in the spring, they hunt the dandelions and the plantains. And they just suck them out of the ground and enjoy them with great relish. So I was wondering, do people eat plantains too? I tried them a few times, and I never figured out a really good recipe for them.
I really don't know about that, about plantains.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, no, I can't think that, but you know, I think I would trust your horse.
Yes.
if it's something that they really, really enjoy a lot, there must be something in it that's valuable.
They would skip over all kinds of the new grass and
for
these leafy greens, especially the dandelions with the yellow flower on it.
And oh, yeah.
Then they'd look for the other ones, too. So, and thank you for the elderberry hint. I have a couple of elderberry bushes that I've been sort of husbanding along, and I'll try this.
Oh, do that. That is so good. That is so good.
Okay.
I love it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Okay, we seem to get real quick here. A caller on line one in Belgium, I believe. Hello.
Yes. I'd like to speak out for the morel mushroom.
Yes.
And, I didn't know that there was a type of morel that was poisonous because it is so distinctive.
Yes, unfortunately.
There are several different kinds of morels. There's a gooseneck morel, which also has a much nastier name, but we're not going to use that. And then there's the black, the gray, and the yellow.
Yes.
Black, gray, and the yellow are all very edible. My wife consumes them by the tons. She just loves them. She knows all the spots. We grow them on... She's been on our property for 50 years, and she can walk right to... They'll be here at such and such a date.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Oh, it's just phenomenal. And one other thing I'd like to point out is I think poke is one of the most beautiful ornamental plants there is. That's that purple, interesting flowers.
Yes, indeed.
Purple berry.
Yes.
My wife wants me to knock them down. I said, no, let's let them grow.
No, they have. Now, the poke has a very long, long history. It used to be a matter of eat one poke berry. Now, I don't know why just one, other than eat one poke berry a season for arthritis. And my father spoke of using poke berries to make ink when he was a school child, which would have been somewhere around 1900.
I always understood that the berries were poisonous.
Well, that's what I did, too. That's why I sort of not very sure. But then I was reading, and I was reading last night, and it said it is not poisonous. It just is purple and more bitter. And so there has been a folklore grow up about it being poisonous. And that poke, but when you eat poke for poke salad, which you're going to cook down as a green, you want them only about less than 6 inches tall.
I'm going to have to jump in here because we're all finished. We've got to go with our thanks to our man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, generally here once a month on the first Wednesday. But no, we can see you next month?
No. I'm going to be in Italy.
All right. Well, maybe we'd do something
eating
else.
Greens.
Okay. Thank you very much.